Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We move it, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Hey, what up, boxing fans? This is the Rope of Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. Got off to a little weird start there. Had something in my throat, but I think I'm okay. I do have a glass of water next to me. In fact, why don't I just take a quick sip just to get that figured out? All right. So we are back here on the Rope of Radio Podcast. Late last night, something came up. I did a college basketball show, but something came up, so I had to do something else instead of the show. So here I am, just a chunk of time before I work tonight. So it will be a shortened show. I'm sure some of you like that. Anyway, we have a whole lot to talk about from last weekend. Thurman and Lopez turned out to be a hell of a fight. We'll talk about the undercard as well on that PBC on Fox. We'll also talk about the co-feature in the main event, Munguia and Inoue against who was that guy's name? Rojas and what is the other guy's name? It's like Khan or whatever. That was a good fight, by the way. That was a really good fight. So we're going to talk about DAZN and PBC on Fox. We'll recap that. Both of them had really interesting cards. And, of course, we're going to take a look at that Alvarez versus Kovalev, the rematch on ESPN+. They're going to run it much like they ran that UFC card. And I think at times throughout the year, people should probably to how ESPN and ESPN+ are doing this. Some of the card's going to be on ESPN+. Then some of the card will be on ESPN regular. Then back on ESPN+. I know that's going to be frustrating for some people out there, but, you know, it is what it is. But we'll definitely break that down. Variety of news to touch upon as well. Anthony Joshua supposedly very close to a deal for April 13th. We'll tell you all about that. Sounds like Gennady Golovkin is finally going to make a decision. He's holding a meeting to finalize a contract, which isn't the biggest surprise. I suppose, now that we're here. It just took so long. Wilder and Fury is getting close as well. And not just being close, you know, 2-3 weeks out of being announced, but the venue may surprise you potentially anyway. And there's, you know, a variety of different news items that we'll get to. Bob Arum is at it again, whether he's talking about Crawford, whether he's talking about Pacquiao, whether he's talking about PBC fighters. You know, 1 week, he wants to match them all up with Crawford. The next week, they're all a bunch of journeymen and bums. It's kind of funny how that works. But we'll get into some of that as well. There was a variety of news coming out as far as fights being made, more like mid-level prospect veteran type stuff that I'll breeze upon and kind of update you. There is an update as far as a fight that's coming up in Minneapolis on FS1 at the Armory in April. There's a undercard or a co-feature that's going to that looks like it's finalized. So we'll definitely get you posted there. So we'll start with recap. We'll get you with news. And then, of course, we'll talk about that Kovalev and Alvarez. I think we'll go news, preview, or no, I'm sorry, recap, preview this weekend, and then news, just so you know. Like I said, I don't expect a lot of callers. I do see some people on. appreciate you. You know, as always, 646-381-4990 is the number to call. But yeah, just a quick show. You know, I actually, you got to start your car all early. In fact, I just started it just to make sure up in Minnesota here. It is freaking cold. It's negative 25. Well, it was earlier. Now it's actually gained. It's up to negative 15. Of course, in a couple hours, it's going to be dropping back down. I think it's like negative 27. So I'm really hoping that my car starts later tonight. But you don't know until, unfortunately, you get there. So we'll see how that goes. If this is your first time listening to the Rope It Up Radio podcast, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope It Up Radio. It streams live, it archives, it's all in one place. However, you can check out iTunes, you can and subscribe there, Player FM, Spreaker, Stitcher is another good source. I know a lot of people like their app. I mentioned Player FM. We've got a lot of hits from there. It's a good source. A lot of people like that platform for podcasts, and TuneIn as well. I'm also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network that can be found everywhere, including streaming it on Spotify and iHeartRadio. Head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. You can read an article. I do a weekly boxing article. You can listen to a podcast right there. They have a variety of different boxing podcasts in football and basketball and baseball and hockey. And while you're at it, excuse me, I had to take a little sip of water there. And while you're at it, why don't you go ahead and place a bet at the book? It'll link you right to mybookie.ag. And right about now, a lot of people have cut the cord or are really thinking about cutting the cord. I know earlier, or like late summer, I cut the cord. And I tried YouTube, I tried Sling, I tried a variety of stuff. I mean, I had my smart TV that had, you know, Hulu. I tried that as well as far as cable Hulu. I tried, and then I was just, you know, watching Amazon and YouTube and whatnot. But I decided to go with DirecTV Now. And they are offering really, really good prices. It's a two-in-one. So AT&T customers, I'm going to talk to you in just a second. But as far as DirecTV Now, you know, for well over a decade, I was on the satellite DirecTV, right? Did that for a long time, loved it. But it just got to the point where it just got too expensive, just like all the other cable bills. I mean, the reason why I was on satellite is because the cable, you know, Comcast cable was so expensive. So I went on to satellite, and then that got crazy to the point where you're like, it just seems like a waste of money. But that's no longer a problem for all the people that have cut the cable, you know, cut the cord and just looking for an alternative. Here's an alternative. It's a two-in-one. Like I said, DirecTV are definitely offering, you know, packages at $40 per month with 65 channels, $75, and that ranges from 85 channel live channels to 105 to 125. So the prices are really good. You could still have the standalone service of Showtime and HBO and Amazon and still be $100 at least less than you were paying for your cable bill or satellite bill. And if you're an AT&T customer, see, I was a DirecTV satellite customer for well over a decade, and I've been an AT&T wireless customer for a long time. If you're that, you actually get all those great deals that I just mentioned, those price points, but you get it for a two-year rate. So they can't move it up. They can't bump it up as well. And the technology is starting to really come with this stuff. You know, of course, when you're talking about streaming, it does, you know, the technology is lacking a little bit. I've ever since September, I was going to say late August, but it was early September that I went to DirecTV Now. I've had great success. Only a couple times have I had a little bit of issue and let 5-10 minutes go by and it's just fine. So AT&T DirecTV Now, right now, if you're looking for a streaming service that's inexpensive, you could start for $40. So just so you guys know, had to get that out of the way. There's a really good deal that they are running. So anyway, let's get to the nitty-gritty because we don't have a ton of time this week. That's for sure. We'll start with the BBC on Fox, just to kind of go through it a little bit. It was entertaining. I had a lot of fun watching the fights this weekend in general, you know, in general. And we might as well start, you know, I'll say this. The FS1 card, it had Gary Antoine Russell on it. I forgot the first fight. What was the first fight? It was, anyway, Chris Colbert was in a pretty damn good 8-round fight for him as far as developing. I think it definitely helped his development. It was against Josh Hernandez. Colbert, you know, had a jab and a hard right hand going. He was countering well. At times he got on the ropes. He countered well off the ropes as well. It was very competitive in the second half. I thought it was a good test for Colbert, who's moving his way up. Young B-Hop. All three judges had it 79-73. So I thought for a prospect level, that was a good fight to kind of have as like a – kind of like a main event for those FS1 cards, the prelims. I love how they do that. Three fights. I just like that they do that. You know, Showtime Extreme used to do that as well. Now you see more, you know, them streaming it on Facebook and YouTube, which is cool too, whatever. it works on my smart TV regardless. So I like that. You'd like to see them have at least one somewhat meaningful test or fight, whether it's a crossroads fight with veterans, whether it's this, where you got two young fighters going at it, just something to sink your teeth in. And also, you know, we talk about this all the time as far as undercards. If you're going to have a fighter, especially a name fighter, in a stay-busy fight like this one, was supposed to be that anyway, Thurman and Lopez, or really a tune-up to try to get back and find his groove, which, you know, he didn't necessarily do for the whole fight. But my point is, when you have a stay busy fight on the top of the card, you want to have some interesting fights on the undercard. Thought both DAZN and Fox, for that matter, did it. You know what I mean? I think they did that well. The first one, King Tug, what is it? Niambiar going against Claudia Marrero. Okay, this was a good fight. This was a good fight. I gave King Tut the first round. I also gave him the third and fourth and fifth. So for me, Marrera, although, you know, he did have success, you know, he was starting to step up the pace a little bit, landing in spots. He was a little busy late. He landed some good hooks in that second round. To me, it was taking him a while to get off on King Tut. And that kind of sounds weird the way I say it. but it was a feel-out round to start out the fight. Tug did add a little pressure. But for the most part, it was kind of feel-out round. Tug had his jab and his right hand to the body going. But, yeah, the third, fourth, and fifth, there started to be a little bit more exchanges. Like I said, the left hook definitely a weapon for Marrero. But overhand rights, I think of the third round, an overhand right definitely hurt Marrero. His legs stiffen up, then an uppercut, body shots, a few exchanges. He had a really nice right, did King Tug, near the ropes or on the ropes when he had Marrero there. So I thought it was a pretty dominant performance through about five or six. And then it started to, you know, go in favor of Marrero. In fact, I gave him the sixth round and the seventh round. He started early in rounds. And there was a moment in that sixth round where King Tug had some sort of issue with his eye, and he almost turned his back. Now, he's able to fire back and be okay in that round, but there was two or three left hooks that really landed flush, and it started something for Marrero. And like I said, I gave him the sixth. I gave him the seventh as well. He landed some really nice left hands late, especially like I'd say the last 30 seconds. It was a good back and forth fight for a guy in his, what, 10th fight or 11th fight in Niambiar. That was a good test for him. I think people are kind of forgetting about that. He only has 10 fights, and Marrero is tricky, and he's got some power too. Anyway, I thought he did kind of gain his footing back in the eighth round, landing early left hands. The fight started heating up again. There were some good exchanges as well. A few flush late shots kind of, to me, took the round clearly. But Moreira, I had one in the ninth. He started bringing that pressure, started landing the combinations, started landing some more flush left hands. So I gave him the ninth. So it was like, okay, he's battling back. But then in the tenth, there was a hit on the break. There was a point deduction. Moreira did hit on the break. He was starting to get rough. I don't know, a handful of rounds in, and you know, I can't blame him. What are you going to do? Sometimes you got to be a little bit rough and bend the rules, and that's basically what he did. Great action by the midway rounds, though. There was a low blow. Niambar got warned too. I think it was a low blow. But the better shots, even with the rally, I thought a few right hands, the better overall shots in the 10th round, gave him that 10-8 round. Moreira's nose was bleeding by that too. By that time too. So he was starting to feel, you know, the damage, I guess you could say. And then I gave, although there were some swing rounds, I gave Tug the last two rounds as well. He started landing his uppercuts and counter right hand. Good action the last 30 seconds of the 11th. Early pressure by Moreira, but I thought the better shots that landed, and actually, the only thing I didn't like about it was Niamar doing a little hot dogging too early. I mean, Deion Sanders probably wouldn't have started high stepping that early in the fight, but he ended up getting clipped a little bit. I think he got clipped twice, but he probably still won that round. So overall, I had it 8-4, maybe 7-5, but I think 8-4. The scorecards read 114, 113, 115, 112, and 116, 111 in favor of King Tug. So he moves on. He becomes Gary Russell Jr.'s Mando, which I think is an interesting fight. I don't know if they're going to call for it, though, right away. So there is, you know, there is a difference when it comes to that. So we'll see, you know what I mean? We will see. We'll see if, how that actually plays out. I don't know, you know, I thought it was a good fight though. Really good test considering where he's at in his career. I thought a good performance overall. I did. I thought it was a good fight, good performance. On to the co-feature, Konoski and Washington. Konoski, you know, didn't waste much time. Waste much time at all. He was landing big shots right off the bat. He came out with his jab, landed a big right hand early. Washington landed a few in return, I guess you could say. Then he started getting to the body, did the Polish man. Konaki, who had, I think personally, he sold 1,600 tickets. That doesn't include some people who didn't go through his, you know, ticket selling. So he had to have had at least 2,000, if not more, which was great to see. Of course, the Polish people come out and get behind their guys and gals, for that matter. Started working the body, though. Landed, I think, an overhand right late in that first round. I mean, it was 31-8 right away, and he had him on the ropes, although Konoski did get a cut. I think it was on his left eye. It was a great action round, but Konoski, you know, really was landing the better shots. He landed some hooks and an overhand right that caused the first knockdown. Well, Washington was definitely hurt pretty bad, you know, ended up getting up again, and it was a TKO. It was a wrap. It was done. I mean, just in the first round alone, it was 46-13. I looked at the jabs. I think that was 31-8. Or maybe that was total punches. No, the total punches, 58 total punches landed. in not even two full rounds, throwing 141. I mean, in 5 minutes, basically. So, I mean, he destroyed him. Just completely destroyed him. 46? That doesn't seem right. But anyway, it was a very impressive performance. Now, Konofsky's known to be in brawls and stuff, and you figure maybe Washington's jab, you know, could have contained something, but that was not the case. I mean, 115, 46 and 115 in the first round, dude. Whew. And like I said, 58 overall. Really good performance. This one was in front of almost 2 million people, so you got to love that. A lot of people saw this, and you can't judge a book by its cover, looking at Washington and Konofsky, that's for sure. But a big win for him. It'll be interesting to see if they keep moving him, you know, laterally and keep building him, or if they put him in a step-up fight. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. And then the main event, Thurman versus Lopez, you know, right away, I mean, for the first 3 to 4 rounds, to me, you know, I know Keith Thurman got hurt. I know he wore down in this fight. I also know he was out for, you know, almost 2 years. I think people, they're not forgetting it, but to me, it was just, it's kind of funny how it goes from being a crappy fight, although he's been out for 2 years, card was something pretty good, I thought. I mean, I was okay with Lopez as an opponent because at least you knew what he was going to bring, and he had a full camp. And he's been in camp. You know, if you watch, you know, anything to do with the Robert Garcia gyms, he's been in camp for a while preparing just in general. You know, he got back last year, had a full camp and a fight. And then, pulled that minor upset over that prospect, Miguel Cruz. And he's been waiting for an opportunity, and he stayed in the gym, and he came to fight. So a lot of people were negative about this fight heading in, and now they're negative about Thurman after. So it's like, which one is it? Were you pissed that this fight was happening? Because you thought, well, Thurman needs to take on someone better. I don't care if he's been out of the ring 2 years. But then some of these same people thought, well, Fury's not ready for Wilder. Now, I know that, you know, Thurman didn't gain 100 pounds, but he did get up to 183, you know, for whatever that matters when you're trying to make 140. Like I said, it's not the Tyson issue. But to me, I just felt like I was okay with this fight. I didn't think it turned out to be this good. Maybe the first chunk of rounds is when Thurman would stumble and have some issues and then shake out the rust. But to me, actually, if you take out the 7th round and a couple other rounds, I thought he looked pretty good for a while. And then it was evident that, you know, he wasn't 100% back. But, you know, he was landing some nice shots off the bat, some good right hands. Not many. You know, 3 or 4 punches or something like that actually landed like in a little flurry late from Lopez. But to me, the first couple of rounds were all Thurman. There was some two-way action in spots. But, you know, the jab, a few right hands by Thurman. There was late in it. You know, Thurman went to the body, and then he landed a left hook. He stepped out, used that little angle, and he dropped him. And he landed another left and a right hand. It looked like it was going to be an early night. And maybe he thought, okay, I got this. I am looking pretty sharp. I am going to knock this guy out. And maybe that did something to him mentally on top of what was happening in the 5th and 6th round and ultimately what happened in the 7th round where it mentally seemed to bug him, obviously, as well. So good opening round, up 10-9 in that 2nd round. He had a good measure of movement, landing the body shots with his jab, countering well. And it just took a while for Lopez to land anything significant for me. I mean, I didn't have him winning a round until the 6th round. There'd be some back and forth for maybe the last 20, 30 seconds like there was in the 5th round. But Thurman, he landed flush uppercuts, you know, a left hook and a right hand late. I mean, he was, it looked like, I said, it was going to be a short night after that knockdown. It was only been a couple rounds. But there was some moments in the fifth that, you know, that did kind of lend itself to, huh, I wonder if that'll continue. And I thought it did in the sixth so much that I gave Lopez the sixth round. Although you had the jab and the right, you know, and the left hooks going to the body from Thurman, he got on the ropes. He got stuck on the ropes a little bit in that one. And I thought Lopez did pretty well to get to the body. He actually countered several times. He landed some flush hooks as well to the head and body. And in that, some of the work may have been enough to win that 11th round. You could see his, you know, Lopez's eyes was swelling. One of his eyes was swelling and he had a bloody nose from those first five rounds. But I liked what I saw in the sixth round. And then obviously the seventh round, it was like, wow, okay. You know, you did see Thurman start with several uppercuts and land some nice shots. And Lopez actually picked up the pace and the pressure. He was working the body, but at the start, in the early goings of that round, he was missing some wide shots. And then all of a sudden, I think it was a left hook in another exchange. The earlier one, what was that, second round, dropped Lopez. This time, Thurman got hit like clean, flush. And they had that slow motion where it hit him just in that great spot. And he was hurt. He was definitely hurt. Now, he did end up recouping and landing uppercuts and right hands, but that wasn't until he took a fair amount of shots. And in that seventh round, I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, all right, you probably should hold here. Boom, he gets hit with another shot. You need to really find it. Boom, he gets hit with another shot. And I kind of thought, okay, dude, this might be it. And he did manage to finally hold a little bit, which could have helped him, you know, save him in that round. I mean, it was getting pretty close to the end considering he hadn't been knocked down. He didn't throw a punch for a while. Like I said, he did land some rights and uppercuts late to show life. And that's kind of why I didn't, because of what he did early and then late, I didn't give it a 10-8 round, but I can understand the people that did. Without a knockdown still, that was a hell of a round. And then in the eighth round, the next round, hard right hands early, combos with hooks late for Lopez. But then the jab and the right hand, a couple of those went to the body from Thurman. To me, he started landing the better shot as that round went on, and he was just busier. So I gave Thurman the eighth round, not to say that he walked away with it, but I thought it was a good recovery round considering how bad that seventh round was. So through eight, I had it 6-2. Thurman would land some early shots. He usually started early in rounds, and then Lopez would kind of come on with his pressure and land, you know, some to the body. He was still attacking to the body, but a left hook to the head and body were good enough for me, for him, for Thurman to win that ninth round. Fun stuff, though, back and forth, two-way stuff, the last maybe 40, 45 seconds. More left hook exchanges, too, in the 10th round. Thurman, though, pot shot mode, started moving a little bit early in the 10th, and that led to him moving a lot as this fight went on. So I can understand some people giving him some of these late rounds, and when I say giving him, I mean Lopez, because if you're moving that much, especially in the 12th, he would jab, and he was running a little too much to the point where the Boo Birds came out in Brooklyn. Here, Brooklyn got this two-way fight where both guys were, one of them was down, one of them was hurt, and they're still booing. So I could see, you know, I could see giving Lopez the 12th. The 11th was closer, though. I thought the body shots, there was more exchanges in that one, but the uppercuts. To me, Thurman did look a little tired in that last minute, but I thought the jabs and the left hooks were better than some overhand shots that Lopez won. So I had it 9-3 for Thurman. Some people had it closer. One judge had it 113-113. The other two had it 112. What was it? One a second. That doesn't make sense. 115-112. Oh, 117-110, I think the other one was. I think that's right. But anyway, you know, if you look at the punch stat, 247 to, was it 217 or 117? But 894, Thurman really threw a whole lot, landed 27% to 23%, I believe. Lopez took him a while to get going. Once he did, he ended up throwing 513 punches, landed 117. So 247 to 117, pretty clean win. It's just that seventh, the sixth, seventh, eighth, and some moments late that I thought, okay, he got into some problems. But, you know, I'm not ready to say throw him out with the trash. You know, I follow a lot of people on Twitter and has for years. You expect some of the fans on boxing Twitter to knee-jerk some of this stuff. You know, a week ago, Pacquiao Thurman, I don't like that fight. Thurman should fight Garcia or Mayweather or retire. Now a lot of people think Pacquiao can beat Thurman because Thurman is past his prime. So where is it? You know, is Thurman really completely gone now that it's past his prime? The layoffs that he had between, you know, between some fights, especially from Thurman to there was a large gap from Thurman, or I'm sorry, from Porter to Garcia. There was a kind of a large gap between, yeah, because of that injury. So those gaps and then this long 22-month gap, have we seen the best of Keith Thurman? I don't think this fight represents the best of what Keith Thurman still has in store, but I'm not ready to say he'll be back 100% in this next fight because it's hard to say that, right? I mean, you just never know. When you have multiple injuries, you know, you did gain some weight, not a ton, but he wasn't a guy. He was a guy that kind of gained weight, you know, outside of the camp anyway. I don't know, but I'll tell you what, that Pacquiao Thurman fight has never been closer. Like I said, a couple of weeks ago, I mean, a week ago, literally, because that fight was, you know, two Saturdays ago. Like I said, a lot of people wanted Pacquiao to just fight Mayweather or just retire in general and or fight Danny Garcia. No way would he want to fight Spence or Crawford or even Thurman for that matter. But now, you know, now people are jumping on Pacquiao will Thurman pretty easily. And I don't believe that. I don't believe that. Even if Thurman's not 100% back to his, you know, level that we know he can be, styles alone with Thurman's movement, I think it can give Pacquiao some problems. We know Pacquiao with movers, and let's face it, he hasn't, you know, he hasn't gone against a ton of guys that are capable of moving the whole fight. He hasn't really faced a ton of those guys. So, and we know he can't cut the ring off that well. He's more of an in and out attack mode. Once he gets you hurt or he's flurrying on you, then he'll push you back. Then he'll cut you off to the rope or trap you or whatever. But it was funny how he was like, you know, most likely, I mean, definitely, I mean, no, Pacquiao, I'll fight Pacquiao next. He did kind of hesitate. You wonder if he's thinking, maybe I want to go to, you know, the Porter Ugas winner, but then you got to be on your P's and Q's when it comes to fighting Porter. You got to be sharp. He may have a raw style and whatnot, but you got to be sharp against him. So I love it, though. I love the fact that this is what I love about boxing as well. There's just so many what ifs. Don't get me wrong. Throughout a year, there's a lot of easy fights to pick and favorites and all that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, this fight with Thurman and Lopez was what, an 18 or 19 to 1? Sure didn't play out like that. But then again, You can't take away the 6th, 7th, and 8th and some of the stuff he did late, or even some of the stuff he did earlier, Lopez. But overall, through 5 rounds, I thought, considering the break and the time off, I thought he looked pretty good. You know, I thought he looked physically pretty good. I think physically, if he can, you know, if he made it out of his camp without any, you know, just minor stuff, and he doesn't have to have any kind of surgery or anything like that, I could see him bounce back in his next fight. It might be mentally, though. You know, there is some what ifs. There is some scenarios you play out in your mind. There is doubts. I mean, I thought they did a good job between rounds of showing that Thurman clip, you know, which is very relatable. We saw people, a lot of people relate it with Tyson Fury, of people having mental issues and depression just in general. And when you're in the limelight, you're on the top level, and especially at the welterweight division, your last fight peaked at 5 million. You know, a lot. You're the unified guy at 147, and then it's all taken away from you. And so, mentally, I think just as much as physically, there could be issues. It really, you know, since this break, and it kind of started with people thinking back in 2016 that Thurman actually faked the car accident, the neck injury, the minor neck injury that pushed that fight back. They thought he was faking that. And then in this last fight now, to have this time, you know, it's one thing to have this time off, right? That long of time off. But, you know, he's now hated in a lot of circles because of how he said, I want to get back here. But not just the fans, but even media members have been jumping the gun on this one, I think, a little too much. Now, I understand a get-back year better not be too easy fights. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that. Obviously, this wasn't an easy fight, and obviously, he's not ready to fight Spence. You know, people think now Pacquiao can beat him for sure. A lot of people think that. And so now all of a sudden people are like, oh, he shouldn't fight Spence. He'll get his ass kicked. But yet those are the people that wanted him, some of those people, that wanted him to fight him next. So which one is it? Is he, you know, a quote-unquote pussy because he didn't, you know, want to fight Spence next? But yet you can see he needs some time. He does need a get-back fight, and he got it. So now, to me, it's either got to be Porter if he gets by Ugas for the WBC belt or Manny Pacquiao. And if you look at these dates, both of them fighting in January, Pacquiao and Thurman, it would line up perfectly for a July fight. And that's what it sounded like schedule-wise. That would work really well for Pacquiao in the summer with his senatorial, you know, duties in the Philippines. And if you think about it, couple of summers ago, you know, he fought on ESPN in July. He also fought last year, Matisse, I think in mid-July. And he was talking about how July is what they're kind of, you know, going towards. So that could give Thurman a couple of weeks to kind of shut it down now. And he could actually get back in the gym and work on fundamentals, get some more of that rust off, get some more confidence back before his official camp would actually start, and that would start in May. So if you look at the timing, whereas Spence Garcia winner, that's mid-March. Would they be back in mid-July? They could. They probably would, but you never know if injuries happen in a fight like that, even with Porter, you know, fighting in March. You know, would he be a candidate for that? I don't know, but I think, you know, Thurman, for me, he can really take advantage of this being the heel. He can really do it. And if you look at him this last week, Woodsy had a tweet saying, you know, it's good to have him back. He's a little funny. He's a little cocky, but he's down to earth. And he really knows how to handle the media. You know, he's talking. He likes to talk the walk. He's just a funny dude. But I really think that he can almost add that heel to him because a lot of people are against him now. So, and I think he plays a perfect heel in a sense in an underdog. Thurman as an underdog, that's been a long time ago where people doubted him. So I like this. I think it's going to motivate him. It'll motivate him mentally, I believe. But we're going to see where it ultimately ends up. Now, as far as the viewership on Fox, the whole card, which was over 3 hours, I believe, all three fights averaged 1.98. And if you include Fox Deportes in the stream, I think it's 2.1. So the whole card averaged 2.1, which is great. That's a little bit of a step up from the Charlo card. Not much, but a little bit. If you look at last year's UFC on Fox, they did 1.77 just on Fox, whereas, you know, this card was 1.98. So that's always nice to kind of – I think that's the measurement you really need. Obviously, there was a lot of competition. The NBA, you know, Golden State and Boston, two very popular, you know, teams, and obviously Boston and the East Coast, New York would be involved in that. A lot of population in those cities, so – obviously, that was going to win the night. It did beat hockey out because that last hour where it peaked, you know, during Thurman Lopez, the Thurman Lopez averaged 2.4 million and peaked at 2.7. So it basically, where the Charlo main event with Korobov, that peaked at 2.4, and I think it averaged about 2.1. Whereas Thurman Lopez averaged what that peak 2.4 and 2.7. So that's good. Like I said, it beat out the NHL All-Star game. It seemed like those were really good ratings early, and then it kind of fell off as the game probably got out of hand. I don't even know the score of the game. So it beat it viewership-wise, but this time around, the demo wasn't as good as the December card, but that makes sense. It's a totally different competition on that individual night. So overall, I know Bellator peaked over 1.2 with their kind of named faded guys over there at Bellator. You know, they still draw a little bit over there, that's for sure. But overall, it could have done better in the demo, you know, as far as a little bit better there, but overall, I still think it did pretty good considering. But 2.7, you got to love that. So where do you go from there? Do you go Thurman Pacquiao? I want to see Thurman Porter or Thurman Pacquiao. That's the two places I believe he can go, and that's it. That's it. So I just love going into, you know, these fights now with a different mentality, now with like, man, that kind of opens up my mind because, like I said, a week ago, that wouldn't have been the case, you know? So I love it. And that night, I think they got 96, I think it was 9,600 was the attendance for, you know, for that type of show, that's pretty good, I'd say. But that night, Thurman and Spence and, Kalinowski, you had all these, and Inoue, and Munguia, and you had all these things trending on Twitter, even though the NBA is going hard, and that night, it was nice to see a variety of stuff trending on Twitter to go along with the ratings. So overall, it was a good night for PBC on Fox, so that's three shows on their new deal, and I don't really think people can complain. Two out of the three were definitely ripped down and act, you know, basically like a lot, you know, they treated them as shitty cards. So we'll see, you know, the difference if people remember it to be a good card or they just remember, you know, the overall thought process of this fight. Usually this happens. And it doesn't just happen, you know, Lomachenko. It happens more with the PBC because there's more people are critical more of it on general. Even if they're making legit points, they're just not as critical on Golden Boy or on Top Rank or whatever. But overall, You know, we had a weekend where you thought, who's this guy that Munguia's fighting? Thurman will probably handle Lopez, knock him out. So we went from a weekend where we thought, let's just sit back and watch this stuff and see what happens. And it turned out to be a great weekend. And if you think, now we had a jam-packed December and a pretty packed January now. So that's pretty damn good. That's pretty damn good. Usually December and January, especially mid to late and early to mid to somewhat late, you start to see some boxing going on. But December and January are not known to have great fights or be that active of months. So that was kind of nice. As far as the DAZN, we'll start with the undercard. Zhuzhan, it's like Zhuzhan. Sean and Rojas, Jesus Rojas. That was a good fight. That was a really good fight. It was a back and forth fight. Action wise, this shit was on fire. Right from the jump, opening round, both of them looking pretty good. I gave Sean the it's Zhuzhan, right? So I gave Sean the opening round. I did think Rojas won the second and third. You could see great action by both, though, but the pressure, and I think he was just landing a couple of better shots in the second and third. But it was a close round in the third round. And there was at least a few swing rounds in this fight. Competitive round in the fourth, I did think Sean won it, though, with the better shots. The fifth is one of the question mark rounds. That could have went either way. I think that's fair to say. Rojas still had his pressure. It was a close round. He seemed to fade a little bit in the last part, whereas it seemed like Zhuzhan landed clean shots late, so you probably could have gave him that one. That was close, though. Great round six. The shorter punches, the bigger shots, though, I thought Rojas won in round six. So after five rounds, though, Rojas landed 162 to Zhuzhan, 163. Both of them well over 500 punches. That's just through five rounds. So these guys were really letting their hands go. The seventh and eighth I gave to Sean. The body shots with the left hooks, he was digging in the eighth round. A little bit slower of a pace in the eighth round, which is to be expected with that pace. A few nice lands to go along with jabs I still gave him. Then the ninth round came around. I thought Rojas, you know, one, the pressure, the, you know, that he brought in, he actually picked the pace back up. So I thought some left hands to the left hooks to the body and looping right hands landed. I gave that one to Jesus Rojas, but then Zhuzhan came right back and he was landing left hooks and these roundhouse punches to the body and head. That was a good round. You did see a very strong close by Rojas. Toss-up round that I gave to Sean first time watching it. I gave the last two rounds to him as well. He actually started pressuring Rojas and backing him up in the 11th, and especially the 11th, maybe the 12th too. You could see somewhat of a rally midway with the body from Rojas, but it wasn't enough. And I gave Zhuzhan the kind of in-and-out pressure with activity, but still applying pressure in the 12th. So I gave it to him. It was 7-5, Zhuzhan, 6-5-1. I could see 6-6. Like I said, a few swing rounds, but I was pretty confident 7-5 or 6-5-1, but Zhuzhan did enough. But what the hell was up with the scorecards? 118-110 on that fight? That's a 10-2 fight, really? And even 117-111, 9-3, really? 9-3. Wow. 8-4, I can at least see a little bit better, 116-112. But dude, Rojas lost. It went to Zhuzhan. But I'll tell you what, these guys threw a combined 2,500 punches, 2,574. And look at the landing. Rojas 388, to Shushan's 380, and Rojas landed or threw a little bit more too at 1,329 rather than 1,245. Both of them landed right around 30%. This was a crazy fight, just action-wise. Now, did either guy really, really hurt each other? I guess that is up for debate. And right now, you could say it's the fight of the year. I think that's fair. I'll say this, though. I don't think it'll hold. Well, it's still just January. So, obviously, I'm not looking for it to for sure win the fight of the year. But I think that'll be amongst the top 10. I say that only because you didn't see too many guys get hurt in this one. Too many. There's only two guys in the ring. But, you know, the back and the fourth, you know, the Thurman Lopez didn't have as much action, but it had more drama. So this was a great fight, though. And a great co-feature just in case the main event in Inoue didn't work out. But it did. It worked out. Munguia moved to 32-0. He had a big height advantage, which he mostly does at 154, 6 foot to 5 foot. and 13-0, I believe, was Inoue with 7 KOs going into this. I gave Inoue the first round. Inoue was actually pressuring early. He was landing these roundhouse punches or elbows, whichever. Wild punches, kind of falling off bench, you know, balance. And you had Munguia on the outside really just jabbing and moving. Didn't do a really good job of that, but he did just enough to win some rounds with that style for a while. Inoue still brought pressure, landing combos just in spots. But body shots with both hands, mid to late, just being busier, I started giving the rounds to Munguia. Left hooks to the body and landed his jab in the third and fourth. Then he started landing uppercuts as well. Some heavy, heavy punches to the body. His left hook to the body, Jaime Munguia, is pretty nasty. That fourth, though, and fifth round was fun. It had good moments. But you can really see the range now with just subtle movement rather than full-on movement by the time he got to the fifth round by Munguia. But still, there was good exchanges. But it took me a while. The sixth round, probably the best two-way round of the fight at that point was the sixth round, close round. Inoue landed right hands, overhand rights, and shots to the body. It was a close round. You could have given that round to Inoue, maybe. I thought Munguia won the seventh, though. Had a good round. But he did get hit a fair share. But that's kind of his style. Right, some late overhand rights as well. But then I thought Inoue went on a run. He started kind of, you know, forcing Munguia to the ropes and landed the better overall shots. Big right hands. I gave him the eighth. I gave him the ninth as well. Munguia started getting on the move again early in the ninth round. And to me, Inoue, you know, would land in flurry. He would land that looping right hand. He would just be busier. And once again, he got him on the ropes again. Munguia was digging to the left hook to the body, and he kind of brought that to the 10th and 11th as well. But a telephone booth in the 10th round, just a telephone booth fight, dude. They were getting it in 10th round, flush shots, and he'd follow it up Inoue. But I think I kind of think down the stretch, it seemed like the left hooks to the body, you know, it seemed like a hard shot kind of bent over Inoue a little bit from those hooks. I think he stole the round is what I'm saying, Munguia, in the 10th round. I gave her in the 10th. In the 11th, he may have stole the round. A lot of pressure from Inoue, a whole lot. Great inside work by both. That's a toss-up round, but, first time seeing it, the 11th round I gave to Munguia. In the 12th round, Munguia actually kind of brought up his aggressiveness, looked to close the show. You could see Inoue trying to battle back, but it just didn't matter. Down the stretch, he definitely... definitely won this fight. But Inoue gave a good showing for himself, no doubt about it. It was a very good fight. Munguia landed 276 to Inoue's 122. And 721 overall for Munguia as far as throwing. He landed at a 38% rate. That's a very high rate. To 428 as far as throwing and 29% for Inoue. So 276 to 122. I had it 9-3. I could see 8-4. I guess I could see a 10-2, but I had it 9-3. Two of the scorecards had it 120 to 108. So DAZN had some good action fights, no doubt about it. Very entertaining. But, man, the scorecards are pretty bad. 2, 120-108. We know, you know, that Munguia won the fight clearly. Like I said, I had it 9-3, but you didn't give him a round? Like, for real? Like the first round or the eighth or the ninth? That's none of those, huh? Kind of weird. Then the other judge had it 119-109. So, you know, it is what it is. Scorecard, you know, bad scorecards. A whole lot in the sport. We've had this trend in the last couple of years where we've had that one horrible scorecard where you're like, what the hell was that? In that fight, there was two, if not three, but especially two. But at least the right guy or gal, for that matter. But at least, you know, Munguia won the fight clearly, and at least it turned out that way. If you're going to have some bad scorecards, at least Munguia won clean, so there's no debate. That's what I'd say. Overall, though, a very good card. I'd say the most entertaining card, co-feature and main event for DAZN so far. So kudos to DAZN. Hopefully they keep this up. And this was officially, I guess you could say this is officially a Golden Boy card, really, right? So for DAZN, their first without Canelo. And they definitely did a better job than the Canelo fight. That goes with the co-features too and all that. Really good action-packed fights. Fun weekend of fights in general. I had a blast watching it. So that about wraps it up. As far as this weekend goes, you know, I know people are going to be a little disappointed the way the fights are going to go this weekend. Okay. And by the way, Munguia is going to, he's going to be back April, can't remember now. I think it was April 13th or something like that. He's going to be back against Dennis Hogan in Mexico. So he's going to be back pretty quick. He's so young. I think they're probably moving him right. He's got a lot of fights for how young he is. But he still needs to keep working on stuff. You know what I mean? Like I said, young fighter. Pretty sure he did get an amateur career. I think they actually said it on the broadcast that he got over 100 amateur fights. So that's positive. But so that's that. Let's see here. So the way the card's going to go, and by the way, we do have a show box from Rochester, New York tomorrow night. So just keep that in mind. You know, Ronald Ellis, who's been in other, you know, on other show boxes, he's taking on DeAndre Ware. Could, you know, it's always worth at least DVRing, of course, you know, because it's show box and it's the most consistent thing out there. Now, a lot of people are going to be pissed on how this stuff works out. Patrick Day against Olivia. I don't know how to say Ishmael. I know that. That's going to be, I believe, that in Richard Comey versus Chinayev. That'll be on ESPN. So the other card will be on ESPN Plus. And I believe maybe that Patrick Day fight will be on ESPN Plus. And then Richard Comey and Oscar Valdez returns off of that broken jaw last March. or last April, one of the two. Those two fights, one of them's for a vacant IBF lightweight title. That's the one Garcia vacated. Like I said, Oscar's coming back. That'll be on regular ESPN. I know people are going to be mad that they're showing these fights and not the main event, Sergey Kovalev against Alvarez. And then Teofimo Lopez taking on Diego Magdanello. That'll be on ESPN Plus. So we're kind of used to, so far with ESPN Plus, when it's been on ESPN, the ESPN Plus, the undercards have been there, right? So you have the undercard fights and then the ESPN. So this one's going to piss some people off. You better get used to it. It's going to happen more. That's just the way it goes. I mean, the first UFC event ever on ESPN, they did that as well. There is a something on DAZN, Ted Cheeseman and Sergio Garcia headline a London card as well that night. So I like Teofimo Lopez coming back this quick. I mean, doubt, oh boy, Maynard so quick. Why not bring him back? He's taking on Diego Magdanello. Hopefully he'll get some more rounds. I think he will stop him, though. I think Richard Comey will win. I think Oscar Valdez will win because, you know, he's taking on a guy that he's just coming back on. You know, he's just starting to kind of get his groove back, and we'll see where he goes, Oscar. But at least they are giving us some undercard stuff on this one, you know. I haven't been too impressed with a good chunk of the undercards, but for ESPN. But I think they did pretty good here. Like I said, I understand that I always kind of felt this was going to be an ESPN Plus card, so in my mind I had it that way, right? So it doesn't really affect me, but I could see people that don't know it are going to be, you know, flipping through the channel, be like, where the hell is this? Where the hell is this? Or some people that don't have ESPN Plus, they're going to be like, what the hell's going on? So anyway, as far as the main event goes, Alvarez and Kovalev, I actually did go back and watch it yesterday. I gave Alvarez the first two rounds of that fight. The first round was close. I think he just landed a few more. Alvarez, to me, though, was landing his jab pretty sharply. And so that did it for me for the first two rounds. Then I gave Kovalev every round after that. The body work and the few right hands by Kovalev in the third, the fourth, he landed the bigger shots, and he became the aggressor in the fight. And he started landing hooks and right hands and, you know, little spurts of combinations with those left hooks and right hands in the fifth. And then in the sixth, combos early, started to really land some hard right hands in that shot. I think with about 45 seconds left, Alvarez did land a really hard left. I think it was just a straight left of his own in the sixth. But then a hard right hand by Alvarez with a 1:15 left in the round scored a knockdown. And you could tell, as we saw back then, that Kovalev was hurt, man. Uppercuts. Left and right hands, the left hook dropped him for the second time. He got up on, you know, from the second knockdown, but it was a right hand and it was over. They had to call the fight. It was done. And so how do we see this one playing out the second time? You know, I mean, I did have it 4-2 for Kovalev. The only problem is, where is he mentally right now? He got knocked out in his last fight. The step-up fight, the real fight, you know, he got those two quick little fights. But his last real fight before being knocked out, he was stopped by Ward. Like I said, he had those quick little two tune-ups, but they didn't really do much for his psyche. Now, he was winning this fight, but he was also winning that first Ward fight, too. Many people thought he won. I thought it'd be fair if he gave him the decision in that first fight, but we saw the second one go. So just as far as fighting and your mentality and once you get hit with something, you know, where's it at this time? Because I thought he did show a lot of heart by getting back up, you know, when the going got tough. He just got caught with something so freaking flush, he just couldn't recoup. He couldn't recoup. And I don't see him being able to recoup. It doesn't seem like he's really got those skills to hold and to just, you know, buy time when you need it the worst. So although I could see him, and the thing is, before I say my prediction, I could talk about all this stuff, right? But then, as we know, oh, by the way, he's got this lawsuit coming up. I'm sorry, he's got court and a lawsuit now, because now that female, she actually brought a lawsuit with them too. We're going to get into more detail once it gets closer. I think it is April 8th is the next hearing date. So we're going to give you a little bit more detail, but you know, I don't know, man, I guess there's an eyewitness. We're going to find out, but she's suing him. She's suing him. So where's his mind? Even if he didn't do it, right? Let's say he didn't do it. Where's his head anyway? I mean, it's a distraction regardless. So I got to think Kovalev is going to get stopped again. And, you know, I think he's going to get stopped again. And, but I could see him winning the fight. I had him up 4-2. But I just think that Alvarez now is going to be a little bit more aggressive, which I think will make it a really fun two-way fight. This is going to be a blast to watch, but it's just hard for me to pick Kovalev, even though I saw him winning, you know, the first through the first six rounds, 4-2. So I'm going to go with Alvarez to knock him out late. I think it'll be like a TKO where he's going to be in trouble and get knocked down, get hurt, and finally they're just going to be like it's over. So that's my predictions on this weekend. Like I said, it's going to be ESPN Plus, then normal ESPN, and then ESPN Plus. So keep an eye out for that. Anyway, let's get to some news before we wrap up the show. Some breaking news right now. Yesterday, the news started coming out that Abner Mares is hurt and that he wasn't going to be able to fight. And there was, you know, he canceled a media event. I think it was going to be his workout. And now we know why. He went to go check it out, and he's not going to be able to do it. He is out. He hurt himself, suffered it while training. You know, I think it was during sparring, I believe. So Hugo Ruiz steps in as a late replacement. Only, you know, a week and a half before the fight or something like that. And Ruiz, you know, it is what it is, right? He's in shape, I'll say that. He just fought, you know, a fight 2 weeks ago, not even, 10 days ago on that Pacquiao Broner undercard. Because, remember, he's the one who was supposed to fight the Pacquiao protege. And that guy was like 5 pounds over. So he's ready. I guess, you know, his people said that he got right back in the gym after that event. So he's ready. So I guess for, a replacement, it's not half bad. But then again, you know, it might as well, I don't know. They could cancel the event. You know, I think what it is they have a lot of tickets sold for Mares and Davis. And I understood Mares versus Davis. Mares, you know, going, you know, risking a big fight for a nice paycheck. Screw it. Why not? So kudos to him. But, you know, also Davis hadn't fought in April. I wasn't crazy about the fight. I thought stylistically it'd be fun to watch. But we know Mares at featherweight, you know, featherweight's not even right for Mares. So why would 130 be okay? So we kind of knew how that one was going to play out anyway. But they did draw a lot of tickets. They were putting in those extra bleachers. So that kind of bums me out because anytime you can get, you know, a good 7, 8, 9,000 people to an event, I'm not saying they go 9,000 there because I don't think you can get that much. But a well-sold event, I think they did ticket the price, you know, the they priced the tickets right. I'll give them credit for that. But to me, I think they're just trying to salvage the event because the tickets are sold. Now, are they going to give people a discount? Because they should. They should give them a refund or a discount. You know, they should be able to have that option. We've seen this before. Sometimes it just gets outright canceled. Sometimes the main event just gets taken off and they go with the undercard. We saw that over the summer, actually, with on a Ramirez card. So I'm not, you know, Hugo Reyes at 126 is like a fun contender to watch. I guess you could even probably say contender/fringe contender, you know, he's right in that mix. But to me, it is what it is. They're salvaging the event. Like I said, I thought Abner Mares served a good purpose for Tank to come back because he hasn't, you know, hasn't fought since April. And it was also a name, you know, at the featherweight division in these, you know, these lighter divisions, Mares is a name, you could tell, because, you know, they did good at the ticket, the top box office. So it is what it is, though. I think they should probably just cancel this event or push it back, but I really hope they don't screw the fans. I'm sure there's going to be some information coming out. We'll fill you in next show for sure if that's the case. So it is what it is when it comes to that. So this last Monday, Anthony Joshua, the reports came out. Anthony Joshua announced his fight probably with Dillian White. That wasn't the case. In fact, instead of that, that was such a heavy rumor. Instead of that, we heard that now there's an official offer to Big Baby Miller to fight him in June. So, you know, we heard rumblings of that last week, and we didn't know if Eddie Hearn was kind of like, you know, just saying it. Or actually meaning it? Was he saying it to get Dillian White to bite? He increased the offer for Dillian White. Anyway, it sounds like it's just a matter of time until Dillian White and Anthony Joshua, the rematch, gets announced. It's just a matter of days. It's very close. That's the last thing that I got for you out of that. Pretty sure that Big Baby Miller thing was just to try to say, hey, Dillian, we'll move on without you. But who knows? But April 13th at Wembley for DAZN here, Sky Sports pay-per-view there, of course. There was a variety of other news that I'll get to. Tevin Farmer and Jonah Carlo are going to fight. Katie Taylor returns on the card. This is March 15th in Philly at DAZN. This is Tevin Farmer's homecoming, basically. Katie Taylor on the card. I like that. Sulecki and Gabriel Zotto could be interesting. By the way, George Groves officially retires, so kudos to him. I think he's picking a right time. He's taking a lot of punishment, but he's been in a lot of great fights. He had a nice last great run to his career, so kudos to him. Kudos to him. There was a rumor that the World Boxing Super Series, it's coming soon. The announcements are coming. So maybe later tonight, tomorrow, I don't know. We keep hearing that it's coming, but here we are out of January, coming into February. You know there's no fights in February. Will they have fights in March? I doubt it. So now it's looking like April or May when it was supposed to be January, February, or maybe February, March. That was the whole thing about the schedule that people like to fight in early fall and then the fight in the winter and then the fight in the summer. You know, within 9-10 months, you get the whole thing wrapped up. So kind of sucks for DAZN because they need cards before that Canelo Jacobs. And this is one of them where you're like, man, they could have had a bunch of fights before that, and that really helps their subscription. And just being a hardcore fight fan, I want to see these fights. And, you know, they told us the schedule, even for season two. So I just hope they get made. I'm not going to go on some big rant because they didn't happen in February, March. I just want them to be made because, I'm interested in the matchup. So hopefully that gets done. Another rumor out there, because when people went to go sign up for DAZN, there was a rumor that there's a price change. like when you sign up right now, there, I don't know if it was an error or what, or a sign of things to come, but they were looking like when you signed up that they were charging $19.99 instead of $9.99. Now, is this a ploy to just get a little bit more money out of people, and they know that they're either not going to care or notice, or they'll switch it next month? I have no clue. Could have just been an error in general, because it is $9.99, just at $1.99. I don't know why that would change, though, when it comes to signing up for it permanently. So kind of strange there. That's just a rumor. I'm not saying they're changing it, but I saw a lot of posts from people saying, oh, so now it's $19.99, but then they got charged $9.99. So I don't know. Not to freak people out, but, you know, I'm just wondering what the hell that's all about. Just a little follow-up from Pacquiao Broner. That created a $6 million gate. It almost doubled Manny Pacquiao's last fight in Vegas against Jesse Vargas. And it did better than the third Bradley fight. I believe that was in Vegas as well. So $6 million is a damn good gate. And especially when this fight was kind of like, oh, by the way, this is going to happen. Didn't happen, you know, in a great time of year. Still managed to go over 400,000 pay-per-views. So, you know, kudos to them. But $6 million. Here's a fight that just got added. It's not official, but it is official. It's not announced. But Sergey Derevyanchenko versus Jack Colquay, who actually fought, was it Sulecki and Andre, pretty tough. This one's for the IBF final eliminator. Luda Bella won it, the purse bid. But this one's going to be put on April 13th on the FS1 card for PBC here in Minneapolis at the Armory. The main event is Truax and Quillen. So that's a nice little doubleheader, Derevyanchenko versus Colquay, and then Truax and Quillen. So that's a good look. Wilder and Fury. Okay, Wilder and Fury, part two, sounds like it's going to be done within 2 or 3 weeks, okay? Or at least we'll get a lot more information then, we'll see. But it sounds like the Barclays may finally get one of these big fights. The fights that normally go to Vegas. And that would make sense. One, you know, the Barclays have been built up so much, you know, from DiBella and Heyman, that you figure at some point they're going to get one. Two, they've increased the bid, this circle. They want to finally get one of these, like I said. They tried to get Mayweather there before as well. But three, the big thing, the fact that Canelo is fighting a legitimate unification fight, you know, in May 4th, in Vegas, kind of tells me it's going to go to Barclays. Because do you really want to have an event, 2 weeks after that, after Canelo? The two dates, the working dates, and this is just dates thrown out there, April 27th and May 18th. I can't see April 27th. I really can't. So you're going to go after a pay-per-view and sell a pay-per-view? I don't think you're going to do that. And then you're going to be right before Canelo. I'd say to let those 2 weeks kind of die down, or at least a full week after Canelo's fight die down, and then get that May 18th date. Now, who knows? Maybe it'll be in June as well. They do probably have to worry about that July pay-per-view with Pacquiao. More than likely, that's going to be a pay-per-view. It is July. That's when it sounds like he may fight. So I'm thinking it'll be May 18th, and obviously, you know, to be in Vegas, like I said, 2 weeks later, it's MGM's probably putting out, an offer, and who knows, maybe the PBC and the powers that be are just using the Barclays as leverage, but they're probably thinking, shit, dude, that's back-to-back big events, and if you add another layer, we don't know the gate, but you assume it's well over three, if not well over $4 million for their first fight in L.A. You got to think the powers that be go, well, shit, the first fight wasn't in Vegas, and we still did a healthy gate. That means we could do a healthy gate in New York. So 2 weeks after, now you don't have to pay the pay-per-view prices thankfully, to DAZN, you know, for that Canelo Jacobs fight. So that helps them there as far as the pay-per-view. Then they could be a month after that Crawford and Khan pay-per-view. So that's my guess. I would say the earliest date will be May 18th. And I can, unless it gets, you know, pushed back to June, then I could see it go to Vegas. But I actually think the Barclays is going to land this fight. I really do. And I'm excited because they built up such a brand there that they deserve it. And now you've been in the L.A. market with this fight. You did attract attention in L.A., which helps the pay-per-view sales in general because it's a large city. Now I think you already have, you know, a guy who's fought there three times, to big crowds every time, bigger in Wilder. So he's already known there. Fury's going to be fitting, you know, in New York, just as good in L.A. And then you got that large population, the number one media capital, to help you out with not just ticket sales, to, you know, to be able to, you know, they're of course going to gouge the prices, but it helps you with pay-per-view sales too, because people are going to hear the week of the fight, oh, there's a big fight, you know, and then see the ticket price go, I'm good, I'll just buy it on pay-per-view. So that would be dope. I mean, put it anywhere. But if you could put it in the Barclays, and the 6-hour flight from the UK is way better and way less, you know, way less expensive than going all the way, adding that chunk of time onto that flight to Vegas. So that would be great. I'm going to wrap up the show. I'm going to save the Bob Arum stuff and some other fights that I got to announce for next week. I just don't have the time. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of talk going on in general from Bob Arum, talking about Crawford, his next fight, talking about Pacquiao, the whole nine. You know, now he's saying he stopped the Pacquiao-Crawford fight, which is a bunch of bullshit. But, hey, we'll cover that next week along with a bunch of fights. We'll be back next week. Enjoy the fights. Let's hope we get a barn burner either on the undercard or Alvarez and Kovalev. That turns into a great fight. I really think that's going to be a fun two-way fight, much like the first one. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I just...
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.